first day of the rest of my life. B stands behind the mic like Walter Cronkite. Welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. MrShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, a.k.a. Gaston Lucien Lebanon. Today's episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on this day, August 13, 2025, and another scorching day in the 613. Today's episode is also rated R and F for fuck Whitey as a staff, record labeling as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. This podcast ain't for you. All right, before we continue, before I get this party started, I am going to say shout out to all you listeners. And at the same time, I'm going to ask you to applaud yourselves. Yes, it's mandatory. So applaud yourselves now. You know what? Maybe you narcissists should sit this one out. But the rest of you, the reason why I like to start with applauding yourselves is it's a reminder for people like me to do something nice for yourself. So I'm assuming if you're my target audience, you struggle with doing shit, kind stuff for yourself. You'll do kind stuff for everyone else, but not for yourself. And if this happens to be your first time listening to this podcast, welcome. Yay! Here's hoping I say something on this episode that allows us to make history. ShutUpPodcast.com is the website, and ShutUpPodcast411@gmail.com is the email address. You know what? If you're looking for things to say in an email, probably let me know how you, A, discovered this podcast, and B, how do you listen to it? I have a bunch of show notes at the beginning, and it's meant to be a, how do you say that, something you can read while you listen to the podcast. And just hit me. Some of you folks, I do that too. But not everyone goes from the website, or like they'll just click on the episode and won't think about going to the show notes. Oh, well, lesson learned. All right, quickly, this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue. In today's episode, titled 291, I'm considering work in progress. I don't want to lie to you. I'm still figuring out what to title this episode. But I'm going to talk about, in the future thought, I'm going to talk about something that I felt during my last therapy session that I've never felt before. And there we go. It's created suspense. Check. But before we do that, we're going to start with some quotes and some randomness. God damn it. You know that feeling you get when you're about to start a cold, or like that thing in the back of your throat that's messing with you? I can feel the need to cough it out. I don't know what it is, but it's usually the beginning of a cold during the scorching heat. But on the plus side, it's an excuse to get me some pho. I don't know how you pronounce P-H-O. Well, I know how to do it in English, but how it's properly pronounced. Pho. Some pho. Pho. Whatever. Vietnamese soup. All right, let's start with some quotes. First one goes. Oh, right. I was thinking. All right. Let me just read it. What a privilege it is to be able to walk. What a privilege it is to be able to work out. What a privilege it is to be able to eat. And what a privilege it is to grow grateful. I don't know if you could tell when I said what a privilege it is to work out. I mean, I guess it is, but I mean, you know, it doesn't feel like that before and during, and sometimes even after. But that's a different story. Oh my God. My point is, I purposely chose this quote about gratefulness because I want to attach it to what I was saying at the beginning of applauding yourselves. And part of applauding yourselves is an exercise into being grateful.
You know, I didn't come here to preach to you today.
All right, next quote. This year taught me not everything deserves my energy. If it's not helping me grow, heal, or get closer to who I'm becoming, I'm learning to let it go. I like that one. I really like that one. Yeah, if you're looking for a purpose in life, make it growing, healing, and getting closer to the person you're becoming. All right, last quote. This one I may have read before, but since I can't remember, fuck it. I shout out to all you new listeners. This is another one of those trauma versus healing. Excuse me. Trauma says, I have to over-explain myself to be understood and accepted. Healing says, I'm learning to trust my own voice and be comfortable with being misunderstood. My value is not determined by others' perception of me. And the author of that one is Zara Bass, B-E-S. All right, I think, let me check my notes, make sure, but I think that's it for quotes. Let's jump into some randomness.
So you're a philosopher?
Right. I feel the need to acknowledge the fact first, it's my goddamn podcast. It's my goddamn podcast. I have to remind myself. And second, every once in a while I do things differently, and I have two monitors, privileged, and it was two monitors, and I just reorganize where I usually put my notes and my sound effect shit, and it's I feel like Jamie Lannister after he, spoiler alert, gets his hand cut off and he's got to learn how to use his sword with the hand he didn't lose. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Being dismembered does not compare to reorganizing my screen, but it's my goddamn podcast. I say what I need to say. All right. Second thing I'm doing, I feel, you know what? No, I'll save that for future thought. All right, let's first item for randomness, and I'll tell you what, I will just play the clip that inspired today this randomness.
Gentle reminder that the men who did me the most dirty in my life were all leftists, intersectional feminists, people who love to work with women, people who surrounded themselves with women. Because that was the staging so that if anything ever happened, which it did a lot with these people, if anything ever happened, they could run cover for each other and say, well, no, I only work with women. Well, no, my girlfriend, we have the best relationship. I would almost prefer the outright misogyny of right-wing men and the way that they handle women to the insidious nature of lecherous leftist men, because it's calculated. Right-wing men, I don't know if they're smart enough to be able to pull off the long con that leftist men do to get women, to abuse women. It is an impressive display of peacocking, of pretending to be a feminist only to do really heinous acts on the down low. And that is something that I have seen across entertainment industries. That is something that's super prevalent in politics. It's this idea, it's this smokescreen that's created that says, like, because I'm friends with women, because I respect women, it could never be me. So when allegations come out and you have all of these smart women who are friends with these people being like, oh my God, I'm genuinely shocked by this, that's all staging. That's all on purpose so that it feels too ridiculous to believe. It's so gross, and it's crazy to see it play out yet again in the public sphere. And I'm so happy we're not falling for it. Mm. Oh, and also the convenience of surrounding yourself with women and being a safe place for women means that you also have so much access to your next victim. It's so easy to be an advocate for women when they're also the pool that you pull from whenever you want to abuse them. That's awesome. That's super cool.
My first thought, especially with the way she ended, hold on a second. Excuse me. The name content creator is TikTok content creator is Arden Rose. Arden Rose. My first thought was the white people I've met who surrounded themselves with black people, and how the early days assuming that, oh wow, they must be enlightened for them to be they must be enlightened, or they must be knowledgeable about black people for them, since they grew or since they surrounded themselves with black people. And you'd be wrong. Yep, some of those people. It's amazing. I've met white people who grew up with white, who black people, and still held on to their white supremacy, to the pecking order. It's like they didn't see themselves as oh my god. All right. But okay, I don't want to focus on that aspect of what she said. I do want to focus on how much, one, I can relate to her feelings of not trusting men, or of being let down, or being skeptic around men, because even I have that. I think most of us men have. When we see a man identify themselves as feminist, your first thought is, A, is it a punchline? B, who's he trying to pick up? Or C, E, D, and F, is he for real? And you know what? And I say this, even I myself would tell a woman, hey, trust your instincts. When you're around me, please always trust your instincts. My intention isn't to be a bad person, but I do think about all the men I've looked up to. Okay, look, I think, here, let me just start by saying that I even struggle with my own masculinity. I struggle with with the idea of what it means to be a man. Like, it's really messed up. Part of it too is all my examples. You know, I'm gonna all 99%, a significant amount of all my example of masculinity let me down. Or okay, we're. Here's how I broke it down. There were two kinds of men growing up. There were the men who didn't understand women at all. And then B, there were men who understood women just enough to get what they wanted from them. B, that category of men, either they were players or they were the ones, they were players. And sometimes part of being player is, ooh, yes, I'm sensitive to the needs of women. Full of shit. And I remember seeing like all of them fall and then telling myself, what hopes do I have? And these are like the kind of things that I'm dealing with in therapy. Funny that I bring this up. And whatever, right? Yes. So even I, part of my journey into being the person I'm becoming, or the person I want to be, is also being able to unlearn and delete that file I have on masculinity and create my own one and say, okay, well, fuck them. This is who I can be. But even I myself would not feel comfortable around a woman who, like, what's the word, has faith in me to not be like everyone else. It's like I have a huge fear of also being another disappointment. So we have that aspect, right? But again, returning to the idea of I do not fault a woman for not trusting a man who presents themselves as an ally or one of the kinds who gets it. Oh, shit. Sorry, I'm impressed with myself because I wrote the points that I wanted to make and I'm at the final point. All right, so I'll just get to it. To add to it, I think about some of the porn flicks, some of the porn videos of these porn that's out there. And a significant amount, you know, again, when I'm young, didn't even think about it, but it's only as an adult you start realizing, you start seeing, like, a significant amount of that content is based on taking pleasure on the misery of another woman. It's never presented that way. Like, they make it look like, yes, she wanted this bad thing to happen to her. And they all do. I remember I used to joke sometimes seeing clips, and my first thought is, I really hope that actress was well compensated for that scene. And I remember saying that to another dude, and what was his reaction? He goes, I forget what it was, but it was something toxic. But I remember reaching a point with porn, it's like, yeah, porn got less interesting when I started realizing that, oh, that's a human being. Or that actress, for all I know it, because, you know, some of these, like, they don't standardize these things, but some of them are like, they don't treat these. I'm probably watching a video of a woman going through the worst thing to happen to them in their life. And you know, and I gotta be careful because I know I'm women do love sex, and all that. But based on what I know about men, you should not be surprised if there's a scene you're watching and there was, she was like the lady was coerced into that scene. I don't know. I'm just okay. Well, getting back to my point is, friend of mine, actually a male friend of mine, he helped me see this. When I say male friend of mine, but I mean like he's one of those males who are like enlightened about feminist ideas. Actually, he's the one who put me on to the book by Bell Hooks, Feminism is for Everyone. And I remember him saying, I should have him on the podcast, but I remember him saying, is like the mainstream definition of masculinity is based on the opposition to femininity. It's like, it has nothing to do, whatever men represent, women represent the opposite. Femininity represents the opposite. And it's like this us versus them type of shit. So getting back to the original point, to what homegirl was saying is, yo, I can relate to her skepticism around she didn't say good men, but like the men who are supposed to be fucking allies, who present themselves as allies. I'm the feminist. I'm better than that sexist pig out there who says all the wrong things. I can relate to that skepticism. Shit, I'll even encourage it. But yeah, I can relate to it because I feel it myself. And look in the mirror and I'm like, actually, no, I don't look in the mirror and says, yo, you a male chauvinistic pig. But, I was trying to remember. It's not uncommon for me to be around a woman and I'm like, don't be a creep. I hope I'm not being a creep. And final thought is, I remember bringing this up with my therapist, and it was along the attitude, okay, this is, I'm going to joke about it, but it was along the attitude of, man, ain't shit. I'm at war with men. Fuck men. You know, I'm like, my colère envers les hommes était non. My hate, my anger towards masculinity. I was expressing it to her. And I don't know why I was expecting her to be like, yeah, you're right, man. Fuck these guys. Let's go kill them all. Whatever, right? She's a therapist. And she was like, but you're a man. And at first I was confused. I'm like, what? Are you the Uncle Tom of feminism? Is that what you are? And, but I realized her point was, you can be your own. You can redefine masculinity for yourself. You know what? I think I might make the title of today's episode The First Day of the Rest of My Life. Because I'm struggling with that fact. You know what? Let me save that for a future thought.
So you're a philosopher?
This next one is a thread, is a post on Thread that I've probably put it in my other links for you returning listeners. Returning listeners and read and the astute students or astute listeners who listen to the podcast and check out the show notes. Yeah, it's an old one, but I'm bringing it back again before because I feel it deserves some thoughts. And it reads, having a black child and only surrounding them with whiteness is child abuse. Oh, you know what? I missed the part where she said only surrounding them with whiteness. Oh, my God. I initially read it as having a white child. I initially read it as having a black child and sending them to white school is child abuse. She says only. That's the problem. And I'm realizing that, okay, I'm a little different from this because, yes, I grew up in Ottawa, capital of Canada. So needless to say, like, you know, the Great White. No, wait. What do they call it? The Great White North? Shit. What's the other name for Canada? The Great White North. Anyway, whatever, man. But it lives up to the title. I grew up and was surrounded by white kids. And it was so surrounded by white kids, looking at a picture of white Jesus. So I always felt like the other. I always felt like something was wrong with me. Yo, I was better off growing up with a tail behind my back or in my butt. So even though I grew up with white people, the church I went to was a black church. My parents, okay, don't get me wrong. My parents weren't on that pro-black tip. But their saving grace is at least the church we went to was a black church, well, Haitian church. Haitians are black people, but I'm just saying they didn't go because they wanted to be around black people. They went because they were looking to be around other Christian Haitians. And of course, I had my relative, but still, I went to their schools. And I'm convinced what I like about the idea of child abuse or... All right, I won't use the word child abuse, but I am going to say that going to white people's school has made it difficult for me even now to see white people for who they really are, for what they are. I feel like going to white school, I was like flooded, drowned with white people propaganda. It's like, yeah, slavery happened. Yeah, we were involved, but we're civilized. I mean, you should be grateful that your parents left their shithole of a country to come here to be around us white folks. I felt like it was never said that way, but it was never like, is it explicit? It was implied. And I know a lot of my white teachers, if they hear that, they'll be like, oh, how was I involved in this? But I'm like, it was going to white school really like fucked with my blackness. Or my blackness, period. I'll leave it at that. I had to unlearn, thank God for hip hop, but I had to unlearn the whole white is superior, black is inferior. Like, we're a bunch of fuck ups. And they figured it all out. I mean, come on. Their history class was, let's talk about all these white people that did all these great things. And then we'll mention black people, slavery. You know, there was no mention of Martin Luther King. But, you know, it's like, yeah, racism ended after Martin Luther King. But I wrote in there, I'm not calling it child abuse. I'm not mad at the author using the term child abuse. But they go growing up in a white people school did warp my sense of reality about me, the world, and white people. I'm thinking of that scene in Boys in the Hood where Lawrence Fishburne, is it Styles? Was that his name? Styles was his name? Lawrence Fishburne's is, you know what? I'm not going to be a black podcast and not know what Lawrence Fishburne's character's name was in Boys in the Hood. Fuck of that. You can talk shit about my podcast, but the one thing you're not going to say is he didn't know, he couldn't remember the name of he's in the Furious. Oh, Furious Styles. Jason Furious Styles. There we go. All right. High five for me. All right. That scene where they, I think it's Compton, but they go in the hood and he's got Trey and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character and Morris Chestnut, Ricky, with them. And I remember, like, they're in the hood, and they're looking around, Trey and Ricky, and they're kind of scared. And I love when he says, we can't be scared of our own people. That's powerful. I can relate to it. I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I remember the first time I was in New York. What's that? We're in the Bronx? Lock the doors. Click, click. And this is before where you can press a button to lock the door. You gotta click. I made it obvious. Blink. One story I could share with you that made me relate to that scene of we can't be scared of our own people. It's this one time me and my folks, we went to Haiti for a funeral. And the city in Haiti where we were going was like right on the border. It's called Wanamet. And it's right on the border. Like you can see Dominican Republic from this city. It's like right on the border that separates Haiti from Dominican Republic. So what we did is we landed in Dominican Republic. Apparently it was just cheaper that way or whatever. It was more convenient. We landed Dominican Republic, went to a resort, and then... I laugh because I'm thinking of what I'm about to say and it makes me laugh, so my bad, man. We landed in Dominican Republic and then we did a 3-hour drive. I forget the name of the city in Dominican Republic, but it's one of those fucking resorts near the airport, 3-hour away from the border. So we drive to Wanamet and it's a 3-hour drive, right? And and I remember being on the resort and being like, I don't want to leave here. That's the part that made me laugh. Anyway, we get to the border, right? And what happens is the cab driver who drives us, he essentially drops us off there so we can walk across the border, like it was just right in front, cross the border, and then meet someone else there, right? But in order for us to get out of the... Okay, we get out of the car with our suitcase. And my mom is driving me nuts saying, watch your wallet, watch your this. Like, I'm already feeling anxiety. Right? Because, you know, I grew up in Canada. What the fuck? So I go out and I would call it a mob, but a significant amount of people surrounded our car. Because they were gonna they're like panhandlers or whatever, or hey, can I help you with your suitcase and all kinds of shit and whatever, man. So a sea of black people. Holy shit! It's probably my whitest moment. A sea of black people surround us, and my mom just finished saying, "Yo, watch your pocket. You can't trust these people." A Christian woman, whatever, right? Watch your pocket and all shit. Like basically, she didn't realize, but I'm like. Scared as fuck right now, right? I'm like, I can't fuck. Well, I'm not Black Dynamite. I'm getting whatever, man. Anyway, so I'm nervous. I'm fucking nervous. So we get out the car. I'm unpacking my suitcase, and I'm looking forward to our contact to help us cross the border and whatever, right? And then a bunch of strangers are around us, and there's a lot of like, y'all, can I get your suitcase? Y'all got to all kinds, right? And all this is in Creole. And there was one dude I remember looking, and I swear he was mean mugging. It's like he could smell the, oh, he's weak. I could just talk him into giving me his wallet. Anyway, but I remember nervous out of my fucking mind and thinking all kinds of every stereotype, every negative shit that I've ever picked up growing up with white people. You know, these are savages. Like, it's like playing in my head. And then as I'm freaking out, and then at some point my mom is like, she comes out, she goes, "This is how do it." Like, they're in French, she's like, "Yo, knock that shit off!" Like, yelling, like a black woman, like yelling. And one dude's like, "Okay, mommy." it's like basically she was just saying, "Fellas, calm the fuck down, back off." She didn't use those words, but you know, the authority of a black woman. And it's like she tapped into the instinct of their mother, and they were like, "Yeah, you know what, let's calm down," and whatever. Like, they backed off. They backed off. Now, I'm not trying to say my mom had juice or connection. My point is, in that moment, I humanized all these people. They were all human beings. They all grew up with mothers, and they've all been beaten like mom. Like, she said that same tone. It reminded me of when I was like fucking around messing around with my white friends, and then hearing this one dude show up out of nowhere and say, "Hey, ain't you the child of so and so?" I'm like, "Yo, fellas, I'm getting the fuck out of here." Like, instinctively, "Hey, yo, I need to cut the dumb shit or else Pops will fuck me up quick." Anyways. But yeah, no, I'm adding to, yes, growing up with these white kids, growing up in the whiteness was not healthy for my blackness. Especially with teachers who had no business being around black children. But whatever, it is what it is. One thought I do have, one more thought, two more things. The reason, I've said this before, but for you new listeners, the part of the reason why I start and end my podcast with "fuck whitey," with yes, on one part it's humor, but on the other part is too, is it's also like an affirmation, a reminder for myself that be who you want to be, talk how you want to talk, fuck the white gaze. Part of growing up with white people, I swear, I don't know if it's a trauma. I think it's a trauma response, but it's like I'm constantly, like that joke is like, when you're black, there's always a white person watching. Sometimes I make up a white person looking at me and saying, oh, look at him being a nigga. Oh, look at him eating fried chicken. Look at him. Oh, my God. Drinking Hennessy. And it's like I'm always like preempting. It's like I'm conscious of a white person. He's going to bounce off and say, "Hey, stop being a nigger."
So you're a philosopher?
All right, last one. Oh, yeah, all right. You know what? Because I just realized a lot of these randomness could have been future thought, but it is what it is. Fuck it. It's my goddamn podcast. All right. I'm going to just read this to you and, yeah, make it short and sweet. Okay. This is a post I found on Reddit in the subreddit HSP, highly sensitive people. And the person who wrote it is Adita. I don't know if people care about. You know what? Links are in the show notes. That's why. If I forget to say the name of the author of whoever posted it, it's because the links are in the show notes. You can get all that detail from there. And this one is someone posted a piece or something to think about, or wrote this up. And the title goes, "Trauma makes HSP weaker. It's not just sensitivity." And it goes, "A lot of us think we're too sensitive for this world." Amen, brother or sister. A lot of us, can I repeat that? "A lot of us think we're too sensitive for this world. Crowd drain us. Noise hurt. People's energy feel overwhelming. But sometimes that's not just high sensitivity. It's trauma we don't even realize is still there. If you're highly sensitive, You already feel more deeply. But trauma can turn that sensitivity into hypervigilance, constantly scanning for danger, even when there's none. By the way, I read this to my therapist, and I was like, yo, is this bullshit or not? Because I'm about to treat this like the Bible. And she gave me the, how does this make you feel? What do you think? One of those answers. But whatever. I'm relating to it. But I'm reading this. This is me saying, but it's, well, also, I know it's not the gospel. It's just one person's thought. All right. How I realized it. I used to think I was shy and introverted. That's my world. In childhood, I believed everything people said about me. Can relate. If someone told me that I was bad at something, I accepted it as truth. If I was bullied, I avoided friendships. If I was mocked, I stopped trying. Man, I should contribute to this article. The coping habits felt like my personality, but they were actually survival mechanism I learned as a kid. Signs it might be trauma, not just sensitivity. You avoid things you love because of fear. You feel insecure around people. You avoid conflict no matter what. You hide your skills because you fear judgment. You see yourself as weak. An HSP without trauma can get overwhelmed, but still joins life. Interesting. An HSP with trauma often stays away completely. God damn it. This person's talking to me. What helped? Questioning my thoughts. Who told me this? Is it true? Finding safe, supportive people. Getting therapy. Taking small steps to prove to yourself the world isn't always dangerous. The point? Being highly sensitive is not the problem. The real problem is when trauma makes us believe we're weak or too much. Once you heal, you can live fully without being on guard all the time. If you've been avoiding life because of sensitivity, maybe it's worth asking if trauma is the real reason. It's not your fault, and it can change. Now, the reason why this post strikes me, aside from relating to it, who can relate? Sorry, I got that Logic song, was it 1-800, whatever, but that voice constantly yelling, who can relate? The reason why this strikes me, especially the timing after reading this, is what I thought about after reading this this post was... what's the name of the pod? Oh my God, Chris Lambert's podcast, the Mundane Festival, episode 800, and he had Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips, and he said Rod Stewart. Anyway, Rod Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips on there, and they were celebrating a milestone at the same time. And but the part that I appreciate, and a reason why I like listening to his podcast is the last part. Chris Lambert, the host of the podcast, he talks about his dating life, and he's open about it. You know, he's careful not to say real name and whatnot. And the idea, and what I like about it is the intention is not to bad mouth or the person he's dating or put their business out there or his business out there. But it's more, I love hearing his experience. But in this particular conversation, I found myself, so Chris is just like, talks about how he enjoys dating. The sense I got, he's like, it's the ups and downs, and it's the journey, right? The journey to find the Mrs. Right, or the one for him, the one he could, you know, take it to the next level with. And I'm enjoying listening to these stories as a spectator. The butt came in is I found myself thinking about how come I don't feel like he does. Is it because I'm old? Is it because I'm older? Is it because I've gone bitter? Is it I'm is something wrong with me? But I remember when I felt like he did. Granted, I wasn't as active in my dating life as much as he is. excuse me, I'm not calling him a whore, but I'm saying active. Like I was the timid type. I was the, my dating life wasn't active, but there was that desire to find a partner, to someone to share my life with. And now today it's like, I'm scared at the fact that it's no longer there. I say scared. I don't know if scared is the right word. You know what? I'm going to say scared, but or weirded out at the fact that it's not there. And part of it is, I'm trying to figure out, maybe it was never real, that desire to find a partner. Maybe the only reason I was doing it is because of, that's what I thought society expected of me. I remember when I graduated from college, got my first quote unquote real job, and moved out of my place, and I remember telling myself, "All right, I got these suckers." Like I remember, okay, next step is just get married so I can convince these people that I'm an adult. Anyway, so I remember, yeah, the quest. I felt like the only reason I wanted to get married is to convince people that, hey, he's okay. He's a mature adult. He's got his shit right. Sometimes I wonder, like the same way, I'm not going to use that example, but I'm just going to say that I don't know, but I don't know if it's normal to feel how I feel, like uninterested in dating or getting back into dating. I'm just weirded out by it. It's there's a line by Clips, I'm not sure if it's Pusha T or Malice, who says it on their first album. They have a track and the line goes, club life is the reason I love life. I used to love clubbing. Now hell no. You couldn't pick. Yo, I remember the last time, this one time, I was supposed to hang out with my friends, and Scarface was playing. I was like, oh, well, I guess that's my excuse to not to go. Or, again, live in Ottawa. I remember it started snowing. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's my reason not to go out. Yeah, fuck it, I'm not going clubbing. But I was so surprised at how, yeah, I'd rather stay home than fucking go out there. And it's probably why the title, again, the theme is coming back. I think what's weirding me out is letting go of the past, because the past shaped what I thought I was. The past shaped my, letting go of the past and embracing the future. The first day of the rest of my life. Like looking forward instead of behind. Because when I look behind, I'm like, how come this is not there? And like looking behind makes me feel like maybe something's wrong with me, as opposed to maybe I should be embracing the future and saying, nah, something was wrong with previous me, and the version I'm living now is doing it right. Anyway, I'm gonna leave it at that, so we can jump to feature thought. But I am going to ask, if I'm gonna end this thought, is who can relate? Holla at me at shutuppodcast411@gmail.com or check me out on the social medias. Okay, this is it. Let's jump into feature thought. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. All right, we're back. Behind the scene, I blaspheme and order some Uber Eats. It's my goddamn pocket. No, it's my goddamn stomach. All right, let me wrap this up, because I spent a lot of time on randomness. All right, that's right. I was in the middle of explaining final feature thought was the feeling I felt during my last therapy session that I've never felt before was, are you ready? Brace yourself. Boredom. It was boredom. Not what do you call that? Fuck. What's the name of that? Oh, Jesus Christ. Catharsis. Now, don't get me wrong. No, I'm not saying the session was boring, but I remember this is what happened, right? And it's important why I'm talking about that. There was a moment of boredom. What happened is I came in on a high. I came in proud to tell my therapist, well, A, I had two victories under my belt. If you listen to the past episode, this is like the story continues. I had two great examples of putting up boundaries, of setting up boundaries, of taking up space. I was feeling that high. I stood up for myself. I was feeling that high, and I knew that my therapist was aware of the first story, but she wasn't aware of the second one. But I was coming in feeling like King Kong. Like my like I'm 8 feet tall. I'm on the block with the AC on. No, whatever. Anyways, so walked in feeling good, and I remember giving my therapist a high five, or was it a fist bump? Whatever, man. But I was telling her like, yo, you're gonna be proud. So she's good at celebrating victories and good job and things like that. So I knew I was gonna get that because of the first story. The first story is, for those who don't know, is the letter that I sent to my employer where I reported some a racist incident, and also it was and also a problematic employee that they had with them. And I shared with her the letter in an email, and that was one. Two, I mentioned this client who I put my foot down and say, hey. No more me not listening to my instincts. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you how shit is going to get done. I know it sounds like bossy, but no, it's, I don't know how I would compare it. It's like, if I was a waiter at a restaurant, I would be the waiter who's like, customer is always right. You know what? Okay, there's no way for me I can explain this story where, no, I'm not the villain in this story. It was just, I was in a scenario where I put my foot down and essentially it was boundaries. And, oh my God, I'm still in the middle of the setup. Right, boundaries. And I remember, first, she gave me the high five, and I remember telling her the story. And she was like, and I think the word she used is, okay, so it looks like you're integrating. I forget the actual wording but essentially you're putting into practice the shit that you've learned. The practice, you went from theory to fucking practice. And after that moment, I remember talking to her, and I remember feeling like, I have nothing to talk about. I'm cured. I can't remember, but I remember it was the first time where I caught myself looking at my watch and going, damn, we're still not done. And the reason I bring up the thought is I remember thinking, had I not stood my ground, had I not had a story about, had I did the opposite, basically repeated the same habit, the whole therapy session would have been me beating myself up, talking, I ain't shit, fuck the world, I hate the world, and blah, 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 just in my pattern. But the session would have been like, oh, well, looks like we're done. But the fact that I had a victory story, I don't know. I remember feeling like I'm cured, or I don't need this anymore, I'm good to go. Don't get me wrong. No, there's still things to go through. Actually, randomness is, if you've gone for random, after going for randomness, there's a series of shit that that I still need to work out in therapy. But just that small victory made me feel like, we're done here. What the fuck is there for us to talk about? Anyways, it's just a reflection. It's just a reflection on coming in on a high, and I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any more thought past it. But don't know. Again, I'm going to say, can you relate? Can you relate? I was supposed to reference one of my favorite rapper is, oh yeah, no, I'm thinking of making the title of today's episode. I might meet my next ex-wife. Tonight, I might meet my next ex-wife. How many words is that? Tonight, I might meet my next ex-wife. That's a lot. Yeah, that's six. Whatever. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll see where the spirit takes me. But with that said, this concludes today's episode. Another reminder, website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Before I end this show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue.
Rouge et bleu.
I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario and Télé-Québec. I represent and hold it down for black folks who say yes to Big Rue's question.
Are you an outcast?
This episode was rated R and motherfucking F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be done with Whitey, then fuck you too. Thank you for listening. And remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast.
I'm black, y'all, and I'm black.